G'day, welcome to the Fasting Highway podcast. I'm Graham Curry, your host from Perth, Australia. I lost 60 kilos or 132 pounds living an intermittent fasting lifestyle, and I successfully maintained that weight loss now coming up 2 years. I wanted to bring this series of podcasts to you to give you an insight into what it's like to living an intermittent fasting lifestyle. I'm also the author of the book, The Fasting Highway, which is a story of my journey overcoming chronic addiction to fast food and sugar and taking that walk from morbid obesity to normality. So sit back here with us on the Fasting Highway in the next few weeks and listen to some inspiring guests and some experts in the intermittent fasting community. And thank you for joining us. Enjoy the show. G'day, welcome to the Fasting Highway podcast, and this is episode 63. So today I'm delighted to be joined by David Williams, and David is 55 years old and he was born in the United States, but he currently resides in Toronto, Canada, where he's been for some 25 years. And David's had quite a few issues with his weight during his life, stemming back to the days in the military. And last November, David's wife Barb discovered the Fasting Highway Facebook group and podcast and alerted David to this fact. He looked into it and he started intermittent fasting the very next day, and he's never looked back. And in just a few short months, David's released some 50 pounds and found an amazing amount of non-scale victories and health benefits. So here to tell us all about that today is David Williams. Oh, g'day David, and welcome to the Fasting Highway, and thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here. And it's great to finally get a chance to say hello to you and to say thank you.
Oh, thank you. David, for those that don't know you out there, if you could just run us through a bit of your backstory and sort of the problems you had maybe with weight or any health issues in your life and sort of what led you to finding the path on your way to intermittent fasting.
Sure. Well, I first was obese when I was in middle school, and my family put me on a diet, and of course that didn't work. As I hit growth spurts in high school and that, I got skinny again. But the moment I stopped growing, university, and I went after that 4 years in the Navy, I struggled with weight that entire time. And of course the Navy, you know, you can't be obese in the Navy. So I tried lots of diets, exercised as much as I could, and managed to merely be overweight until I got out of the Navy about 30 years ago. And then right after that, the weight just took off. And I would say that since then, I've been between 40 and 90 pounds overweight that entire time. I've tried all sorts of diets. Some of them, a couple of them, were helpful. They didn't really work over the long time, but they taught me things that, that paid off for doing intermittent fasting. Health-wise, I've been fortunate that I was not really affected by my weight until the last year. Looking back about a year ago, my belly was bigger than ever. Due to some binging, I was even like my belly button was starting to come out. It was quite horrifying. And also I was snoring all the time, and I started to have gastric like episodes in the night to the point where my esophagus was just irritated all the time. And I knew I was going to end up on prescription drugs within a few months. And I knew that I really needed to do something about the weight. And I went back to the diets that had worked in the past, the low-carb diets, trying to do the longer fasts. And just my carb cravings were so great that I was just having no luck. I would only last like a day or two and then be right back at it. So, yeah, that was sort of the background to where I ended up with, or I guess when I discovered intermittent fasting.
Okay. So how did you go about discovering intermittent fasting, David? Did you read something about it? Were you referred by a friend?
My wife, Barb, was on Facebook and bumped into your page. I don't know how, or maybe your podcast first. And so she literally looked up from her computer where to me looking at mine and said, have you seen this Graham Curry's Facebook page, the Intermittent Fasting Highway? And she pointed it to me and I got on and looked, and within 30 minutes of reading through and seeing real people results on it. I mean, I've seen the before and after photos, you know, you see them for everywhere on online, and they're of course so faked and photoshopped, but seeing the community and seeing real people with real results and reading your story, it's like, okay, I'm doing this. And that was it. I think I started the next day or the day after, and I haven't looked back. And that was, I want to say, November 19th.
Okay. So yeah. November 19 last year, and sort of just run us by your stats, David, sort of what weight you were then and also what height you are.
Yeah. So, I would say that my adult height is 6'2", but I'm getting to an age where I've lost one or two of those inches. Weight-wise, the official starting weight or for starting intermittent fasting was 266 and a half, actually, 266 and a half pounds. As of today, I'm 212, and that's actually kind of a milestone for me. Almost exactly 30 years ago to the day I left military service and I got a reserve card, ID card, and it lists my weight as 212. I have not been this thin in literally 30 years.
Oh, that's amazing. In such a quick time as well. Yeah. I mean, you're only talking about four months there. So David started off, for Australian listeners there, around the 120 kilogram mark. And he's got down there to that weight he's currently at, he just mentioned. So when you started, David, how did you start? What was your fasting protocol? How did you choose that?
Okay. So I shamelessly copied you, Graham. I literally looked at what you did, 23-in-1, cheese and crackers to start my meal. I had done Jason Fung's fasting earlier, so I knew about living on days of coffee and water, black coffee and water, so there was no problem with clean fasting, and I honestly have not tweaked it a bit. I mean, when we have friends over, I might extend my window to 2 hours or something like that, or it might move from 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. or something like that, but there's really the basics of it just never change, and I'm getting such good results. I don't really see a need to tweak it. Food-wise, I started right before December, and I decided that if one meal a day was going to be my life, I needed to make allowances for the holiday to have the things that I want, not deprive myself. And that's what I did for the entire month of December. I was part of a cookie exchange. I had cookies. I had Christmas cake, eggnog. I had all my favorites. There was nothing I was going to say no to within my window. And that month, I still lost 4 pounds, which was kind of mind-blowing for me. I'd never had a December in my life, I think, where I weighed less at the end than I did at the beginning. And because, you know, I felt, you know, great and was happy that I took taking care of myself, I said, okay, well, January, I'm going to try a restricted diet. I'm going to try and turbocharge my weight loss. And that was when I did slow carb. So I don't know if you're familiar with that one. It's kind of like keto, except you have beans. So I have no sweet whatsoever, not even fruit. I don't have any grains of any kind. So I have dairy, nuts, seeds, veggies, meat, of course. And that next month, I lost 18 pounds, the month of January. And the weight loss was so tremendous, and I felt so good without wheat and sugar in my life that I said, you know what? I'm just gonna keep doing this until I get to my goal weight. So that I would attribute that style of eating and the intermittent fasting to the reason why I've been losing so fast.
Yeah, that's interesting. And so you've really kept this simple sort of lifestyle with the intermittent fasting. And And as you know, that's I'm a big advocate of that. Just keep this simple. I mean, pick your fasting protocol. Just fast, you know, do the clean fast. You know, eat in your window what you're comfortable with. And the longer we go with that, David, you start gravitating towards that higher quality food anyway. And I think that's probably what will happen for you. So now you're on this journey, your wife Barb, and a big shout out to her for encouraging you to do this. Obviously, you've got that family support too around you.
I do. I think sometimes, and I think she's going to start intermittent fasting shortly, but she's a fabulous baker, and I do regret that she's lost her number one customer. But I've promised her that once I'm at goal weight and I'm, you know, I'll try bits of things as they come along. But you're right. I think that my days of eating, you know, a big slice of cake are done. I'll try something, but I just find that, I mean, I have sort of, you know, had a binge on a day or whatever, and I immediately feel bad afterwards. So you're right. The foods really do start to let you know when they make you feel good or when they don't make you feel good.
Yeah. You mentioned in your time in the Navy and you started getting heavy and then you left the Navy some 30 years ago and your weight just kept going up and up and up. So run us through those sort of years that are leading up, because did you think that when you look back in hindsight that you had some addiction problems with food, and also any closet eating issues, that type of thing?
About 10 years ago, not only was I eating a lot of carbs and sugar, I was drinking a lot of alcohol, and it was really getting problematic. And at that point, I decided, okay, I mean, my problem-solving solution is to just go to the big bookstore and go through every single book they've got there on the subject and find one that speaks to me. And I stumbled on a book, and I can't remember the name of it, you know, cure alcoholism in a week or stop drinking in a month or something like that. It was some sort of big claim. But the point that the book made was that, you know, alcohol was really destructive to your digestive tract, that it left it so scarred and damaged that all the vitamins and minerals that you need were just passing right through your body, and that your cravings for alcohol was just your body's desire to actually get all the vitamins and minerals that it needs. So the solution in the book was to have these very large doses of vitamins, well beyond the recommended daily allowance and things like that. And I was really careful with it because, you know, some doses are way too high and not good for you. But I bought $400 worth of vitamins. It was going to last me 4 weeks. I started taking them five times a day. And so now I need to talk a bit about, I guess, the shame part. So ever since my earliest memories, I have craved and obsessed over sugar and carbs and snacks. And I was, you know, when I was too young to know better, I would always hog the biggest piece. I would take money out of my mother's wallet and go to the store and buy sweets and snacks. And, you know, even as I got older and I got socialized, you know, you have to, you know, get your, you know, make sure everyone gets a fair piece and all of that. That part of my brain never shut off. If you and I were and some friends were to sit down in a bar with a plate of nachos, I would immediately mentally divide that plate by portions. I would have my entire portion. I would wait to see if other people didn't eat their entire portion. And undoubtedly, they're cold and soggy by now, but I'd start eating their food. It's, you know, and the thing is, this is who I was. I thought this was just me. We have got our good side, we have our bad side, and this is part of me that I need to manage. And it's kind of shameful, my gluttonous self. And, you know, I've got countless episodes in my life of being called out for gluttony or it being revealed, and it's all embarrassing. But getting back to the vitamins, about 6 or 7 days into taking those stupid amounts of vitamins, that whole part of me shut off. That, like, it was like a magnetic field that I'd had all my life that told me where my wife hides her chips and her snacks in the kitchen. You know, I have to consciously avoid them, even though the door is shut. But I just know where they are, and they talk to me. And like all of a sudden, I just didn't care. And I had to come to this moment where it's like, okay, is this? I always thought this was me. This was a bad part of my personality that I had to deal with. And now I'm like, okay, is this actually just how my mind responded to being malnourished all these years? And so, yeah, the it's been a huge struggle with addiction to carbs and sugars and things like that. And now that I've been on this restricted eating where I'm not really getting the sugar and the carbs at all, there's been another huge change, which I didn't realize. And that is also my perception of myself as a moody person. I've always been one of those people where, you know, it's sort of, you know, I couldn't really ascribe it to anything, but you know, you're standing in the shower in the morning and either the world is a good place and it's all okay, or this is one of those mornings where you think, well, you know, you just need to get through to it to the other end. And this is the way the day is going to be. And in intermittent fasting in January, within a couple, 3 weeks of just eating cleanly, no sugar, no grains, I just stepped off the roller coaster. And I can just describe it as being pretty serene. I mean, at times I'll be sitting there and in a chair and relaxed with, you know, and just thinking, who is this calm person?
Yeah.
Because I didn't think that was me either. And I'm still kind of processing it. It's quite something.
It is. And I resonate so much with what you just said then about your issues around food and sniffing out food that your wife was, you know, you where she hid it, all that sort of thing. And I used to say that I would have made a really good tracker dog because I could sniff food out at 100 meters. And I remember finding food that my kids had stashed and chocolate, lollies, name it. And I knew all their hiding places. So, yeah, I was exactly the same. And I think when we are obese, David, we sort of know deep down why we are, but we just can't, as you said, you mentioned, you just can't shut off that button or that feeling where you just keep going with it and you just can't stop. And that is the really downside of addiction, because so many people, when they see obese people, they just think, well, hey, why don't you just eat less and exercise more? And that's the simple recipe that they all come up with. And nearly every doctor will tell you that too. But they don't look deep into the psyche of what's causing that problem. What is the issues? What's the mental part of it? And so you're obviously sort of been battling with that. You've come to intermittent fasting. You started off eating all the things you mentioned there that Christmas where you had, you know, your cakes and everything else and you enjoyed it. You're only 4 pounds up for December, which is amazing. I think I was roughly the same as well, actually, but I don't eat all the things now, but I certainly, you know, now and again I'll have something. But see, the difference I see between addiction and moderation is this, David. Addiction is when you want to eat the whole cake. Moderation is when you only want to eat a little bit of the cake. And I think that's what intermittent fasting has taught me is now the difference between that moderation and addiction. Are you finding that?
I am. I think it's the combination of giving that insulin and your body systems that break over that 23-hour period. I think for me is key that it sort of short circuits that addiction cycle of wanting more and more and more. And so now, you know, I guess about a week and a half ago, it was a good friend's birthday. And so we made the birthday dish he wanted. And my wife made a beautiful mint chocolate cake, spent hours on it. And so I wasn't not going to eat it in front of her. I did a very thin wedge. And ate it. And yes, I did want to have more, but it was very easy to say, no, I've had enough. It tastes good. Yes, my weight loss stopped for a couple days because there's also potatoes with the steak. But it was like, okay, I can do that. And then a day later, after I've had the chance to give my body a rest, I just don't have those wild cravings that I would have before and that addiction. And yeah, it's it was quite an addiction. And it's interesting that, you know, there's also the whole side of alcohol addiction. But the one thing that I've always known about my cravings for alcohol, there was no difference in any form between the way I craved candy and snacks and I craved alcohol. It was the same pull. It was the same desire and or you know, thing at the back of your mouth where it's like, oh, I want more of that. Quite identical for me.
Yeah. And I except, think that's, you know, so
with,
true.
With those, yeah. I said, I was going to say the only difference was that with the sugar and the snacks, I had those same sensations when I was 6 years old and I didn't drink for, you know, another 12 or 13 years. So.
Yeah, that's really interesting. So this has taken a hold on you from a very young age, really. And you've had it your whole life and you can remember those sort of memories of eating those foods. And it's funny, when I look back, I was pretty normal until I was about 14 and, you know, just an average sporty kid, you know, running around, playing rugby, that sort of thing, and I was okay. And then I just started getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And, you know, people have probably heard the story about my mum and dad bought a convenience store and I sat in there and I ate all the wrong foods for 2 or 3 years and that's when I really gained a lot of weight. So those years when you were sort of rolling into your school life and you know, educational years, what were they like for you? Did you cop much sort of criticism or sort of bullying or anything like that?
I think as a pudgy middle school kid, yeah, I came in for my share of bullying. And I would say that probably looking back on my childhood, I was very much more a sedentary child. I was what they would call in the U.S. a latchkey kid. So my mom was single and she would be out working. So she would leave before we left for school. She would come home between 5:30 and 6 p.m. Meanwhile, we've come home from school after 3 o'clock. So I would raid the house to find whatever I could eat and then sit and watch cartoons or, you know, shows until she came home. It's not very active, wasn't into sports. But yeah, it was, and, you know, I didn't enjoy being fat. I did enjoy, you know, I can still remember moments where people poked fun at me for my weight. That was pretty much my childhood, or at least that section of my childhood. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think we all have some painful memories of that time, you know, when we're obese and that sort of thing. And even when you're in the Navy and you started getting heavy, I guess you copped some of that sort of stuff from your superiors and that sort of thing. But let's roll forward now and let's talk about appetite correction,
sure.
David.
Yeah.
I mean, appetite correction is something we talk about a lot. Is that something that's happened for you yet? Like, do you feel that when you're having your meal in your window that you get that signal?
So it's, the body signals are kind of, I certainly won't say that I'm struggling with them, but they're kind of silent. So one of the things that happened for me pretty quickly was I stopped having hunger pangs. It was a thing in the first few days. You know, I would have my hunger pangs, but I'd fasted, and I knew the difference between being uncomfortable and being unwell. And a hunger pang is uncomfortable. You do some jumping jacks, it goes away. But I was always fine, and I could be, you know, just, you know, okay, it'll go away. I'll have my dinner, and then I can just think about how great a dinner I'm going to have, and it always tastes good. But also, but now I just, you know, I'll sit down, I'll feel enthusiastic about eating, but I don't ever have hunger pangs. And so it's like, okay, maybe that was just carbs calling for hunger. Now, as on the other side of when I'm satiety or feeling full, I just lose interest in eating after 15 minutes or so. And I'm a fast eater. I've had a good amount of food in that period of time, but I'll sit there and I'll look and it's like, okay, did I get enough of the right food groups? Did I get my veggies in, my meat in? Do I need anything more? Sometimes I'll just get up from the table, and if I change my mind in the next 20 minutes, I'll go back and have something else. But I never have. I just get up and leave. And I did worry that I was getting enough food. And in the first few days, I'd say, oh, that's not nearly enough. I've got to eat an actual meal. And then I realized that, or it just occurred to me, well, you know, maybe my body just wants to grab the fat off my body instead of eating, you know, me putting in more food. So, I certainly eat a lot less than I used to in a standard meal. It's not, you know, I would guess if I looked at my plate, it might be 12 to 1500 calories, which is, you know, perfectly fine. Other than the first few bites, which always taste fabulous, I lose interest in eating pretty quick.
Yeah. I mean, we've been taught for years and years, haven't we, that breakfast is the most important meal of the day. Then you've got to have those snacks in between, you know, to keep up the strength and all that sort of thing. Your mother and father used to tell you, I can still hear my mother now yelling at me and saying, you know, come out, you've got to have breakfast before you go to work. You know, you can't miss breakfast.
Yeah.
And then it was like, and the funny thing is, and I mention this a lot, and I don't know about you, but I've never been to a funeral where they've got up and said, this person died because they didn't have breakfast. And I think you're right. And when we look at it, we don't need as much as what we think we do. And we find that out in this lifestyle. Like some days I look at the food I eat and I think, wow, you know, like, you know, in those TV shows where they get like the obese people and they go to their house and they lay out all the food that they've eaten for the week and it looks like there's a monstrous amount of food. You imagine laying our food out for a week. It wouldn't really be a lot. But yet we're all strong, we're healthy. Yeah. I mean, I've just come off a nine-kilometer walk this morning, fully fasted. I mean, I didn't need to have like a big super meal of pasta or anything to be able to do that. So, yeah, I think we just don't need as much as what we think we do.
Oh, I concur. I think, I've not felt this good and healthy in years. And it is shocking to, I could slap my forehead with all the diets both I've been on and I've seen friends on all their life realizing, like, why did someone tell you to eat five times a day? You know, little bits of food, but five times a day, you know, when now we know what that actually tells your body to do. It's really, so you're right. I guess the ability to just listen to your body and the, you know, the fact that now that I'm eating once a day, my body sends me very clear signals about what it wants and what it doesn't want and what makes me feel good and what doesn't. It's much easier.
Yeah, that's great. So David, let's talk about what we call the non-scale victories and the health benefits of intermittent fasting, which to me are the two most important things of all. Have you found some of those and can you run us through them?
Well, I think the number one has got to be just stepping off the emotional roller coaster, just the daily moodiness. That's to me, I would say that if I only lost 10 pounds in the last 4 months, that would totally be worth it. The fact that I've got a different body, everyone notices when they see me. And it's now actually becoming apparent to people on Zoom calls. They haven't seen me in person in months, but just even looking at my face, they see a different face. I can run far more easily than I used to. I bicycle a fair bit, and now I can bicycle some of the big hills, and I'm carrying 50 pounds less weight. So I can move up the hills much faster or not have to pause like I used to. I'm out getting new clothes. I like being a sharp dresser, and now I'm going from, well, you know, yeah, dress pretty sharp for a fat guy to, oh, you know, that actually looks quite sharp kind of thing. So, just lots of different, it's just life changing. So,
yeah, there's a whole new life ahead of you, David. When I say that, I mean adventures, that sort of thing that you find you're going on.
Yeah.
You know, I'm out this morning training for a 65-kilometer hike, 37-mile hike coming up in a couple of weeks, and I'm just thinking when I'm walking, I'm just going, man, 3 years ago, there's no way on earth I would have been doing this. Like the things you're doing now, I mean, what age are you, David?
I'm 55 now, and I should say last week I set a record. I walked 35 kilometers one day. So yeah, I mean, and I could never have done that previous to November, you know, when I was that large, holding an extra 50 pounds. That would have just been too much.
Yeah, exactly right. Yeah. And to lose that 50 pounds at this stage of your life, and right. I was a similar age to when I started as what you are now. And I know what a difference that has made to our lives, and I'm sure your wife is over the moon and thrilled that, you know, you're going to be around for a long time, and that's a key driver for me. So, David, let's move to things like mindset here. I mean, you strike me as a guy that has a fabulous mindset and a great attitude to this. You're just keeping it simple. You're just doing your thing. You're seeing the weight come off. You're not tweaking anything yet because you don't need to. You sort of got that food under control. You're doing the exercise. What part does mindset play for you, the mental part of this?
I just try not to overthink it. I'm fairly lucky that because I, you know, the 23-in-1 seemed to work for my body. Because I'd done this slow carb thing in the past, I had always instinctually looked at labels on food in stores and said, oh, that's got sugar in it, I'm not going to have that. Or so I started knowing a bit more about what I wanted to put in my body. And when I saw the great results, I just can't get over the fact that every day or two I'm going to step on the scale and I'm going to see a movement of a half pound or so. And, you know, and then it rises and falls. But I know that, you know, I've never been disappointed over the course of 4 days, even when I've had a binge. So yeah, it's good. Yeah, I just don't overthink it. And it seems to be working okay for me.
So the weighing side of things, you don't weigh every day, you just weigh every few days?
No, I generally step on the scale every few days. Every day. The only exception I'll make is if my friend's birthday party, you know, I had some potatoes, I had some cake, I knew it was going to go in the wrong direction. It's like, you know what? I'm just not going to look at the scale today or tomorrow. I'll step on in 3 days. And, you know, I stepped on it and I was still a pound high, but it's like, okay, that's all right. That's the only time I'll take an exception. And that seems to be good. I worried about obsessing over the scale, but mostly I'm just addicted to seeing a good number come up. And I have never been in a position where, you know, I've had to, you know, I've been dispirited. Like, you know, some days I see progress, some days I don't, but I know in a few days I'll see some progress. It'll be all right.
Yeah. And I mean, we all strike that period where the weight loss slows or we strike those plateaus. Yeah. And I mean, as I say, there's three certainties in life: death, taxes, and weight loss plateaus. And we all come to them. And it's how you deal with that and get your mind in the right place when you're looking at it every day and you're going, well, I'm not doing anything different. I'm doing the same thing. Why isn't that working? Right. And I was doing the 23-in-1, as you know, and I did strike that. I lost 100 pounds and I hit the brick wall and nothing was happening. And I sort of was getting a bit sort of frustrated and that sort of thing. And I thought, you know what? This is working because I feel so great. And I could see all the internal healing and the external healing going on that I thought, you know, I'm just going to trust the process here. I mean, I've lost 100 pounds. So, you know, maybe this is where I need to be here. And then all of a sudden I started moving down again. And you've touched on the exercise side of things there. And what's your exercise regime like now?
So I feel like I haven't quite nailed that one down yet. I want to build up some muscular strength. I'm doing resistance stretching and things like that to keep my body limber. And of course, one of the things is, like, literally there are poses I could never get into before. My knees just wouldn't, go up to my shoulder because of my gut. So now they can. And so I'm realizing, oh, there's some flexibility I need to get back because I haven't had that in decades. So I'm focusing on that, but you know, I'm looking to try and get together some daily habits and working out with friends to do that. But I'm still kind of struggling on that front to find the right mix of things that'll work.
Yeah, I'm sure you will. The thing is, too, that with exercise, you once again, you got to find that jam that suits you as well. I mean, for some people, it's walking. Mm-hmm. Some people, it's biking. Some mm-hmm. people, it's running. Some people, it's doing ultra marathons or whatever it may be. And I know I really love, you know, long distance walking. I love swimming. I love rowing. Mm-hmm. I love all of those things. And I think it's the same with intermittent fasting. You find something you like and you adapt to it. So when you had the weight on, when we talk about it, we all know that we're obese and we see things that we want to do but we can't do, right? I mean, you walk past, say, a football stadium, you see people playing sport and you mean, I wish I could run around like that, or, you know, or you get onto an aircraft and, I mean, I don't know how much traveling you've done, but that's been a real pain for me. I've traveled this world a lot as an obese guy and it's horrible. And then when I'm not obese now and I get on the plane, I absolutely love it. It's such a joy. So visualization, we talk about what we're going to do when we get this weight off. Was that something you sort of thought what your sort of end game was?
Yeah. I mean, being a heavy guy has, you know, its limitations. I've been in, you know, the outdoor seating in a restaurant with the plastic chair where the back leg gives out and I end up rolling backwards in a crowded restaurant. That was quite embarrassing. One of the things that I'd always sort of wanted to do was I love to travel, and I wanted to complement it with taking a bike with me, a folding bike. But folding bikes max out at 220 pounds. And here I was 270. So no way I could actually own one and get on it. And so, yeah, that's one of the things I've always wanted to be able to do, is to be able to get a folding bike that I could take with me. And now I can do that. Now I'm well under the safe weight and I can do that. One of my bucket list things to try and accomplish now that I'm thin, getting thin as I was when at my fittest, is being able to do a pull-up again. And there are things that you can buy that are sort of spring-loaded that actually allow you to start building up your strength for it. So you can put your foot in the bottom of it and it's connected to the same bar. And it's essentially bungee cords all roped together. So it gives you the bit of a lift so that you can get some practice in, even though it's not, even though you can't do your full weight, it'll maybe help you with 30 or 40 pounds. And because it's four bungee cords, you can literally unhook them one at a time. So you can build up you can reduce the assistance it gives you until you can do it fully under your own weight. And those were only good for people who weigh 220 pounds or less. So I've got one of those that I'm going to start adding into my workout. There's a number of things where it's like, now I could look at, you know, I don't have to really look at that bench before I sit on it, worrying that it's going to just collapse under my weight or I'm going to wreck my friend's furniture. It's much better to be thinner. Yeah.
It is, and I mean, we've all been to the amusement park where we've seen the signs, the weight limits and all that, and you sort of just shy away from it, and you walk away, and inside you're sort of really hurting because you really wanted to go on that ride, but you can't.
Right.
And I remember being turfed off a helicopter at the Grand Canyon because I was too heavy, and that was probably one of the most embarrassing moments of my life. The pilot said, mate, you're just going to have to get off. You're just too heavy. And he said, I'm sorry, but you're the heaviest guy here, and we're not going to be able to lift off with this weight we've got. And so, yeah, that was pretty embarrassing. So that's something I want to try again, the helicopter flights. My wife's got two horses out here in the paddock. I'm looking at them at the window right now. I've been sort of looking at them for years and years, and she's always said, oh, why don't you ride that one? And I said, well, no, I'm too heavy. And now I've got down to a weight where I can ride them, and now it's just getting my head around the game of being, you know, in fear of riding them. So, yeah, it just opens up so many doors. And you mentioned there the clothes. You can go on and buy the sharp dress clothes you talked about. And there's so many things that people have got to sort of think when they start. What's my why? Why am I doing this? Write them all down. Visualize them. You know, all these things. List them down. All the things you ever always wanted to do. Because if you stick with this and you make it sustainable and you give it time and be patient, it will work, David.
I've got something to suggest for your bucket list if you want to try something. When I was in the Navy, and it's something I want to go back and do when I'm maybe another 20 pounds lighter, there is, if you go to Kitty Hawk in North Carolina, where the Wright brothers learned to fly, it's these gentle sand dunes, but they've got an opportunity for people who've never done a, hang gliding. You can sort of, all you have to do is practice your sprints. So if you're good at being able to run 50 feet, you can literally just go running off the dunes and it will pick you up and you can literally fly about 15 feet off the ground for quite a bit of time. I did it and it was really one of the great experiences of my life. I want to go back. I want to do it again. If you ever get the chance in Kitty Hawk, I would recommend if you've never felt what it's like to just fly yourself with like no, you know, mechanical aid, just being able to fly, I highly recommend it.
Yeah, that sounds fun. I was actually supposed to be in South Carolina last year in June, and obviously COVID put pay to that, but I'm really looking forward to getting back to the States because there is so many fun things to do there, amusement parks, roller coasters. And see, I could never go on the roller coasters because I was simply too huge.
Right.
And I remember going on you'd go to an amusement park where they had the big water slides. And I got stopped one day and this guy said, no, sorry, he said, you can't go down there because you're going to fly off the other end at 100 mile an hour and you're going to kill someone. And so, yeah, it's those sorts of things most people don't even think about or they just take for granted. They can do whatever they like. And now we're getting to that stage and I know you will too. So, David, I just wanted to talk about the medical side of things for a minute. Have you been to see your doctor at all and discuss this, or has he seen you since you've lost this weight?
No, it's pandemic. They've told us to not come in unless you've got a serious issue for now, and specifically to avoid doing annual checkups. So I'm definitely due for one. I can't wait to go back and see how things are going. I know that, I know all the results are going to be much better. I can just feel it in my body, obviously the weight, but also I know that I'm not pushing, the blood filled with the wrong kind of cholesterol and sugar really does make your blood stickier and it causes other issues with it. And I just know that I'm in better shape.
I mean, that's it. You're your own qualification. It's just how you're going and go and get the regular checks. And I encourage anybody to discuss any health plan with their doctor. But, David, you're also 55. I'm 58 now. And quite often I have people say to me, oh, look, I'm too old to start this. I'm in my 50s now and I'm just going to be fat for the rest of my life. I don't care. I'm obese. That's what I am. It takes too much. I can't do this. What do you say to those people?
I guess I would say that so much of the advice that we were given and the messages about what causes obesity and why we can't lose the weight really set us up to fail, and set them up to fail all their lives. And it doesn't matter what age you are. This is you can start to reset your body systems, your insulin, you can eat better. It's a change that you can make and you'll see great results. And you'll certainly feel better. It may, I know that some people, the longer or the more difficulty you've had with your insulinic system, it may take you a while before you start to lose weight, but certainly you'll start to feel better. And start to feel, the just general effects will be much better.
For sure. You mentioned there your sleep, you've had problems with your sleep there and then sort of waking up in the middle of the night with a few problems. And what's your sleep patterns now? And does your wife tell you snore as much or less?
Oh, she tells me I don't snore nearly as much as I used to. I sleep better because I'm a stomach side sleeper, and I weighed so much that I swayed my, you know, I had sway back because of the weight of my gut on in the mattress. That's not a problem now. I will say that when I first went into ketosis, I had sort of this hunter-gatherer feeling come over my body. And if I didn't go out and burn off some energy during the day, if I didn't go for walks, if I didn't, you know, just move my body, I had a tough time falling asleep. I would just be, my body would just be encouraging me, like, let's go gather something, let's go hunt something, kind of. But yeah, if I have any trouble sleeping, then I know I just need to go out and get more exercise. I need to go out and move my body some more.
Yeah, and I think so. What's your sort of goal range target from here, David? What are you sort of looking at now? Where would you be happy?
Right. So I remember that a couple of times, like literally for weeks at a time in the Navy, where I just ran it off. I got down to about 187, 188. And recently I was looking at the weight tables and they said, oh, okay, well, that literally happened to be the same number where you go from being overweight to being normal, the top edge of being normal. So that's sort of my first big goal. I want to get there and I want to see. And at that point, I know that it's going to be, that's actually when I'm going to start focusing on building muscle. And I know that combinations of muscle versus fat, whatever, are going to start to move that number around. But I think by that point, I'll be satisfied with the amount of fat around my belly, I guess. But mostly I'll be working on muscles in my upper bodies and my shoulder and things like that, and my legs, and so that's kind of my goal. and I really, it sounds a bit wifty just because I honestly don't know what I'm going to look like when I get there. But I think by that point I'll start doing some research on maybe how I want to alter my diet to focus on muscle building as opposed to just eating the way I'm eating, primarily for weight loss.
Yeah. So have you been convinced at all that intermittent fasting will be part of your life going forward, though, after you get the weight off? Is that something you'll always do?
Absolutely. Oh, one meal a day is going to be my way for the rest of my life. I mean, again, looking at your experience, where you found that going to two meals a day twice a week, if that's what I need to do, that's certainly what I'll do. But no, the idea of having three meals a day anymore is just foreign to me. Not going to do it. And it may just be, a longer window or something like that. But I think the rest of my life is going to involve at least, 18 to 20 hours of fasting every single day.
What sort of advice could you give to a guy like yourself who's in a similar position, carrying a lot of weight, and just give them some words of motivation and what to do and where to start?
I would say that I would encourage them to just jump in and again, remember the difference between feeling uncomfortable and unwell. It's okay to have hunger pangs. I know some people will get mild headaches, and maybe that's just a sign to take some more salt in their diet. But just give it some patience, and again, remember that a lot of the advice you've been given in the past sets you up to fail. And if you do stick with it, you'll certainly see some results, and it'll be, you don't have to be heavy anymore.
But David, thank you so much for joining me today, and let's catch up again in 6 months' time. And thank you for joining me here on the Fasting Highway.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much, Graham. It's been a joy to be on the highway.
Thank you, mate.
Oh, thank you, David. I think that was a fantastic insight you just gave there to a beginner's journey to an intermittent fasting lifestyle. And you certainly had a shotgun start and really, really had that rapid weight loss through that six-month period and those NSVs and health benefits. So congratulations to you. And I will point out that this isn't all about the weight loss, and some people will lose faster than others, and that's okay. So just be mindful of that as well. But David, congratulations. Thank you so much for joining us today. Coming up next week on the podcast, we got Netta Gorman. And Netta is from the Life After Sugar podcast. And Netta has had some issues around her health in her life, and she discovered that sugar wasn't for her and was causing some of those issues. And she got rid of it out of her life. And so Netta didn't really have a weight problem, but the health benefits that she's found from ditching the sugar have been quite remarkable. So make sure you don't miss that one. That's Netta Gorman coming up next week here on the Fasting Highway. Also, I just wanted to thank everybody quickly that's been buying my book on Amazon, The Fasting Highway. You can buy that in both paperback and Kindle. It really helps to support this podcast as well. We're trying to keep it commercial free, so thank you. Also to my Facebook group, The Fasting Highway, thank you. We just crossed the 2,000 members this week, just in a few short months. It's been quite a staggering growth. We've got some of the most experienced fasters in the world. We have some beginners to intermittent fasting as well that are seeking some answers, which they're finding there. So that's the Fasting Highway Facebook group. Anyway, until next week, be well, be safe, and remember, clean fasting is everlasting.